Federal Salary Council is expected in the coming weeks to make some new recommendations to change which counties get locality pay increases. At the same time, the Office of Personnel Management is finalizing its 2011 report on how much time employees spend on union activities. Both reports are expected to rekindle the arguments over federal pay and benefits. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller is here with preliminary details on those reports. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom and Emily.
All right, so what's the latest about recommendations for locality pay?
Well, the Federal Salary Council will submit to the President's pay agent recommendations for changes to locality pay areas. It will be submitted supposedly by the end of this week. Angela Bailey is the Office of Personnel Management's Chief Human Capital Officer.
There's a recommendation for a creation of dozens new individual locality pay areas. There's a change in the criteria for adding counties to existing locality pay areas. And there's an adoption of the Occupational Employment Statistics Program method developed by BLS for measuring non-federal pay levels.
Now, just because the council submits recommendations, it doesn't mean the president or his pay agent will accept them. For instance, last year's pay agent rejected the council's recommendations to create new locality pay areas for six areas: Albany, New York; Albuquerque, New Mexico; Bakersfield, California; Charlotte, North Carolina; Harrisburg, Pennsylvania; and Portland, Maine. And in 2011, the president froze locality pay at 2010 levels. So those are just some things to keep in mind as we're looking forward. Now, also keep in mind, however, is that the president, during those years, 2010, 2011, froze federal pay raises. This year, he did ask Congress for a 0.5% increase, so that may bode well for employees when it comes to locality pay and in terms of which counties, which areas, how much of an increase does the pay agent accept.
Jason, I have a question about locality pay. Angela Bailey said there's going to be proposals for dozens of more counties. And if you're looking at places like Harrisburg and so forth, Albuquerque, what's left of the country that's not above average for, when they're done, where do you find anyone who's not above average?
That's an interesting question. I think part of what they're looking at, just to some extent, is the exurbs, the growing areas around the big cities. So if you just take Washington, D.C., now most of Washington, D.C. is already under a pretty strong locality pay, a pretty high level of locality pay. But the D.C. area reaches out well beyond just, Montgomery County or Arlington, Virginia, or Fairfax County. It reaches all the way through Baltimore up to almost the Pennsylvania state line and as far west as West Virginia in some counties. So I think that's the areas that they're starting to look at, not obviously in the D.C. area, but when you go to the bigger cities. For instance, Charlotte, North Carolina, what about, Raleigh, and what about some of those other bigger hubs that are growing? And I think that's where they're starting to look at.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. So about that official time survey, do you know the initial results?
Well, the official time survey measures how many hours employees spend on union-related activities during working hours. Now, under law, they're allowed to spend a certain amount of time working on union activities, but it must be tracked and measured. Now, Bailey says the annual report to Congress shows increases in the use of official time across the board.
Total official time across the federal government has gone up, a 10.85 increase from 2010 to 2011 in the actual number of hours, and a little over 13% increase in the cost of official time hours. So I would imagine when this goes out, there's going to be ongoing congressional media interest, and we do expect to receive quite a bit of requests from the House in particular, or from the media.
I think Bailey's absolutely right. This official time survey is going to get a lot of interest, especially from Capitol Hill. I got the joy of covering last year's hearing at the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee and their subcommittee on the federal workforce, and it was just a bit contentious around, whether this is a good use of federal time, should taxpayers be paying for union work. I mean, obviously, it was a very partisan issue. Now, OPM released the results of the 2009 survey just last year. They were running a little behind, and they found non-postal service civilian agency employees spend about 3 million hours performing union work on government time. This equates to an average of about 2.5 hours per employee, and OPM estimates that the official time costs the government more than $129 million in salary and benefits.
Well, they probably spend that much time in the bathroom over a given year. So how will both of these reports stoke this whole pay debate fire?
I think any time a report comes out highlighting federal pay, both sides are going to jump on the issues. But I think the recommendations for increases in locality pay, I think that's really what's going to breathe new life into the discussion of whether federal employees are overpaid or not. I mean, if you kind of step back from it and say federal employees haven't had a raise in 2 years, They've come under more pressure over the last 2 years from outside groups, from presidential campaigns, from so many different places about, hey, you're overpaid, you're not overpaid. So I think adding, okay, if the president's pay agent does accept the locality pay recommendations, or even if they don't, but they just end up that gets a lot of attention, that's going to just stoke those fires. Now, the other thing, on top of both of these reports, federal pay will remain in the spotlight during the budget negotiations leading up to the end of the continuing resolution in March. Again, OPM's Angela Bailey.
Right now, we are coordinating with OMB on the presidential memorandum directing agencies to continue the freeze on the pay adjustments and the general increase granted by administrative action to the first day of the pay period beginning March 27th. 2013, and that would make it consistent with the extension of the pay freeze on the statutory pay adjustments. We're also preparing guidance to go out with regard to that on the pay freeze as well.
So keep in mind, the continuing resolution does end March 27th. Now, it's unclear what OPM and OMB are preparing in terms of a memo and guidance. I did ask both parties for a further explanation, but neither of them provided any further details on what it means for the presidential memorandum or the guidance related.
Okay, Jason, we'll look for that when we know more. In the meantime, what are some of the other areas that the Chief Human Capital Officers Council is focusing on?
I think there's several areas, including diversity, veterans hiring, certifying federal HR employees, and they also offered a USA Jobs update earlier in the week during their open meeting. Let me start with USA Jobs. Pam Malum is the deputy chico at the Interior Department. She says, in the short term, OPM plans to prioritize new functional requirements to ensure technology changes will continue to meet the needs of agencies around USA Jobs. Over the longer term, OPM will sponsor a meeting with agency officials to create a new strategy for recruiting workers through the usajobs.gov website. Now, OPM Director John Barry says potential applicants, posted more than 17,000 resumes on the site last year, and he says the customer satisfaction rate of usajobs.gov is higher now than at any other time over the past 5 years. Another interesting tidbit that popped up is HR University has now been moved outside of the CHCO Council's purview and into the OPM's Employee Services Division. Catherine Medina is the Chico Council's Executive Director. She says HR University has more than 16,000 users and estimates that the site has saved the government more than $31 million since it launched a couple years ago. Again, OPM's Angela Bailey says they've actually hired a program manager to further develop HR University.
Some of the more exciting things we're doing is working with these colleges and universities to get credited HR degrees up on HR University. One of the things I got to tell you I really have a dream is to create a federal HR degree that would be accredited that we could run through HRU, so that it's one of the greatest ways that I think that we could go about closing the skills gap. Along with that, many of you, thousands actually, I don't know if you know this, but thousands across the government have been signing up to the Back to Basics. You know, everybody talks to me about being a consultant, got to have a seat at the table. You cannot have a seat at the table or be a consultant if you don't know the basics of HR. And so some of the things we want to concentrate in on is staffing, classification, labor and employee relations. I mean, it's our nuts and bolts how we get our job done.
Now, the HR University also is working with American University and George Mason University on separate programs. OPM actually is running a pilot with its own employees and with George Mason to create a master's degree in federal HR. Now, the council also will review plans in December for a government-wide HR certification program. Treasury has one already in operation and may be a model for the rest of government, so it's something to look out forward over the next few months. Another area that I think popped up that was interesting is OPM is developing both an exit survey for senior executive service members who are retiring or leaving government, and it's considering a survey on why SESers stay in government. Now, Bailey says this is just something that they feel like they should do, they have to do to really understand what's going on within the SES.
The purpose of the survey is we want to obtain information that's relevant to the executives with regard to retention, workforce planning, recruitment, and things like that. We're going to use our own staff here to actually get that survey up on a web link so that you can use it so it doesn't become an onerous process for you. But one of the things I wanted to mention to you that I'd like you to see if you guys want to consider, an exit survey is fine for after the fact, but one of the things that we incorporated into some of our OPM offices is a stay interview. where you actually ask people, and particularly SES, why do you stay in the job that you're in? And also go on to ask, you know, a few more questions like, what would entice you away?
Now, Bailey says OPM's experience with the stay interview is helpful in understanding the motivation of SESers. Now, OPM found SESers stay because they feel good about their jobs. They feel like they're having an impact on their agency or on the government, and they, you know, have a legacy. They can say, listen, I was a part of this change or this issue or this mission-critical improvement across government. And when they leave, they talk about, well, we're going to leave because they felt the job was not valued or was not providing a benefit anymore. And many said that if they would leave, they would go somewhere to continue to make a difference and not necessarily just jump into industry and make big bucks. So I think those are interesting things that they're working on around SES, and I think it's part of the SES initiative that, you know, this administration kind of started, but you haven't heard much about over the last, you know, 18 months, 2 years.